Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to News from the Torah. I'm Leah Aharoni. Today is the 16th day of the month of Av, 25th of July, 2021. And this week we will be reading the Torah portion of Ekev. We're well into the book of Devarim, Deuteronomy. And for the past 3 weeks, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, has been giving his parting speech to the Jewish people. The Jewish people are about to go into the land of Israel. They're literally just a few weeks away from entering the land. And after 40 years of leadership, Moses is giving his parting speech. Some of it is rebuke. Some of it is telling the Jews off for everything they did wrong in the desert. And part of it is promises of a beautiful life and a beautiful relationship with God in the land of Israel if they follow the rules and the laws of the Torah. And so in this week's Torah portion, Moses tells the Jews that if they are careful with minute details of observance, if they're careful in their relationship with God, they will have a covenant of love and a real relationship. And this week I want to talk about that. I want to talk about minor things, little details. Are they important in our relationship with God? Are they important in our relationship with each other? And how do we make sure to signal to God and to ourselves that we are in fact committed, not only on big things, but also on little things? This past week has been the week hijacked by Ben & Jerry's and Ben & Jerry's ban on selling ice cream in Israel. It's a complicated story in which Ben & Jerry International, owned by Unilever, told Ben & Jerry Israel, a franchise, not to sell in Judea and Samaria. And Ben & Jerry Israel said, it doesn't work this way. We will continue selling in Judea and Samaria. And so Ben & Jerry's Israel will lose its license at the end of the next 18 months. So if you do not live in Israel, please do not consume Ben & Jerry's. And if you do live in Israel, please go out and get Ben & Jerry's to support the local franchise and its CEO, Avi Zinger, who is very committed to selling Ben & Jerry's everywhere in this country. So we'll be talking more about this, more about relationship with God, more about this Parsha Ekev after the break. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
How did a nice Jewish girl from Delaware end up living in Israel? Shalom, I'm Natalie Zipinski. Join me on my show, Returning Home. Meet different people who have moved to Israel. Hear their personal stories, their highs, their lows, and everything in between. Each week, we talk to experts on immigration and the process of moving to Israel. Listen to Returning Home every Thursday, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back. So this Torah portion is called Ekev. It starts with a sentence from a speech that Moses is giving to the Jewish people before he passes away. And if you do obey these rules and observe them carefully, the Lord your God will maintain faithfully for you the covenant that he made on the oath with your fathers. However, a word that is used here, Ekev, for which this whole Torah portion is called, doesn't make much sense in the grammar of the sentence. And Rashi, the classical commentator, says, why is it being used? So Ekev also has a different meaning in Hebrew, and it means your heel. And Rashi says, what do we need to do to make sure that God maintains the covenant with us? We have to be careful with the laws and commandments which people, as Rashi puts it, quote-unquote, step on with their heels. All the different little things that are not really important, not the big things like kosher and Shabbat and Jewish holidays, all these little things, this little mitzvot, this little laws, they're seemingly insignificant. So what are some examples of quote-unquote minor mitzvot or minor commandments that people really feel no problem stepping over or stepping on? For example, the laws of Lashon Hara, of evil speech. Do you know that you're not allowed to speak badly about other people or to speak any words that could cause them damage? And not only that, you're not allowed to listen to words of damage or listen to any kind of negative reports about other people unless you have a specific constructive reason for this conversation, such as going into business with somebody, giving a job, working in a company, getting married to this person, buying a house from them. So if there's a constructive reason, you can have a conversation about somebody's faults. But other than that, there's no permission in Judaism to talk badly about other people. But it's a mitzvah, it's a commandment that many people, quote unquote, step on with their heels because they don't think it is significant or important. Or little laws like, for example, taking your greens, lettuce, celery, and washing them and making sure that they're kosher because, we just wash them off. It's just vegetables. But for example, lettuce and parsley and coriander and celery, if they have a bug, eating that bug is like eating 5 pieces of pork. So when you ask people, why don't you observe these particular laws, they will usually tell you, well, we're not fanatics. We're just good, all Jews. We observe commandments, but we don't have to get into the minutia, into the little stuff. Don't sweat the details. And this is what the Torah comes to tell us in this Torah portion. Yes, sweat the details. Because while Judaism is not an all or nothing proposition, it's not either you do everything or you just drop it all because it's not worth it. It is solely not like that. The ideal is for you to, yes, sweat the details, and yes, pay attention to little things. Because let's remember what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with God's Torah. God created the world, and he wrote the master plan, actually the blueprint before creating the world. The Torah is the blueprint for creation, the master plan, the instruction guide. You know, use the metaphor that you like. And every single act of ours makes a difference. I think we really need to understand how much every single act of ours, every single action of ours makes a difference. Imagine somebody who works in a nuclear plant, okay? Or somebody who works with diamonds. Every little detail makes a difference. If you polish diamonds and you cut off a millimeter of the diamond, or you polish the diamond at a wrong angle, you can spoil a $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 gem by just polishing it at a wrong angle. And that shows you that little details do matter. If you work at a nuclear plant or at a nuclear lab or a bio lab, a little mistake can cause tremendous, tremendous damage. We understand that. So when we're dealing with the world, when we're dealing with our actions, what God is telling us, every action of a Jew counts. Every little thing you do counts. And yes, this can send somebody into OCD. We don't want to get there. We want to do this in a healthy way, in a productive way, an empowered way. But we need to understand that little details count. Little mitzvot count. Little laws count. There is no such thing as a little mitzvah, a little law. We never know what action of ours produces what effect. And the Tanya, the classical Hasidic text, gives an amazing metaphor to understand this. It says that a Jewish soul is like a rope that hangs down from heaven, and it connects the Jew with God. Now, a little movement of the rope, just 1 degree here down below, Think of a rope. Think of an angle. Yes. It creates a huge movement up there. If you move something a little bit here, and it creates a big angle on the other side. And the same thing, if you can think of an archer shooting an arrow from a bow, every deviation of a tenth of a degree in the angle of the arrow will create a big, big deviation in hitting the mark. So 1 degree deviation of the arrow can create a 10, 15, 20, 30 degree deviation in hitting the mark and can just go off on a wrong, in a wrong direction. So the same thing is with little details and little laws and little commandments down here. Our little actions here create a big difference up in heaven. We don't really understand the metaphysics of every commandment, of every law, of every piece of Torah. But God tells us, please don't treat my laws lightly. Please don't treat like my laws like they're not important. Please don't treat my laws like something you can step on, because you can only step on something that you really don't care about. And I think this is something we all find in our homes. Now, sometimes you will talk to a couple and you'll ask them, like, what are you really fighting about? Or to siblings, you'll ask them, like, what is this really all about? Why are you fighting when there's a fight in the house? And they will usually tell you a story. When you listen to the story, it makes no sense, because they will be fighting about some small thing. Like somebody took somebody's cup, or somebody ate somebody's ice cream, or somebody put wrong bedding on the bed, or didn't clean up something, or it will usually be little things. But we all understand that it's little things that are straws that are breaking the camel's back. Because if you really care about somebody and they have something they really like or they want, we all have these little quirks of our personality, little things that are seemingly unimportant, but when they're disregarded and disrespected over and over and over again, it all adds up and makes somebody blow up. So when you really love and respect somebody, you pay attention to their quirks of personality and their little preferences. And for example, my husband likes coffee in a certain cup. It makes no sense to me, and I think coffee tastes the same way in every cup. But for my husband, it makes a difference. And there's a certain cup that he likes. Now, if I will disregard his preference every time I'm making him coffee, or he will disregard my preference every time he gets something for me, after a while, that grates on somebody's nerves. You'll say, like, you know, like once, twice, three times, but like, you know what I like. We've been together for quite a while. You know I have this little preference. Could you please respect it? If you respect somebody, you will respect the little preferences. And once again, I'm not saying we have to go overboard and we have to be inflexible, or that if somebody is very rigid, you have to go with all of their rigidness and respect it. No. But even in a normal, healthy relationship, there are little things that are important to people. And if you respect the person and you love them, you respect their need for the things in this little area to be the way they are. Now, God didn't give us the Torah for himself. God gave us the Torah for our benefit. God, does he really care if we put things this way or that way, if we do things this way or that way? It really doesn't matter for God. God created the world for our benefit, to do the right thing by us, to give us an experience of an amazing life and ultimate pleasure. And he gave us the Torah as a way to earn that, so that we will have a complete and fulfilling experience. So if God gives us the mitzvot, the commandments, in even little things, things that don't seem to matter, if it didn't matter, God wouldn't have given us that commandment. So they are important. And our way of showing God that we're in a covenant, in a brit, in a relationship, that we're engaged with God, is to pay attention to the little things he asks us to pay attention to. The little mitzvot, the little details, the little commandments. Because nothing is too small. No detail is too unimportant. And when we pay attention to the little things, that's when we tell God, I am committed to you. I love you. I have awe of you. I understand that you're doing the best by me. I'm taking this Torah seriously in all of its entirety. I am not cherry picking. And this is what true commitment looks like. And when we are completely committed, then God reciprocates by also being completely committed to us and giving us what we want, a real, deep, and meaningful relationship. Stay tuned for more after these messages.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I am Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country from Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back. So last week, my Facebook feed got filled up with people writing about the new Netflix miniseries, My Unorthodox Life. I went to see the trailer because I wasn't going to waste 6 hours of my life on watching this garbage. And I got the gist. It's one of those coming out of the Haredi community, it was all horrible, and now I'm celebrating my freedom stories. Now, this is a 6th or 7th such series that the Hollywood is putting out in the past 5-6 years. And it's really becoming a genre, and the storyline is all the same. Now, I'm going to start by saying that each one of the protagonists in each one of the series is a person who experienced many different things in the Haredi community. And I acknowledge that. I acknowledge the different difficulties. I acknowledge that the community probably did not do the best for them and was not the best for them. And I acknowledge that every single person needs to find the way back to their true self, a place where they're healed and they're happy. And I absolutely do not think that every single person should be staying in the Haredi community, in the Hasidic community, if that community doesn't do well for them. So let's just get that out of the way. But I would like to talk during this segment about the genre. How come Hollywood allows itself to create this caricature miniseries about the Haredi community? Not once, not twice, not 3 times, but like I said, 6 or 7 times in the past 5 or 6 years. I cannot imagine such a series being shot about the Muslim community. And actually, I can't remember one being shot about the Muslim community or about the Black community, the Hispanic community, any other community, any other minority. This kind of a series would be branded as racist and the makers would get canceled. But somehow Jews, and especially Haredi Jews and Hasidic Jews, are easy targets and permitted targets for shows that all they do is not just tell a specific person's story, but mainly foster anti-Semitism. So I was trying to figure out how come these filmmakers and artists who are supposed to be people looking for the inside stories, how come they allow themselves to give these treatments to the Haredi community that really have all the nuance of what the colonialists would think of a primitive tribe in Papua New Guinea? So I got the answer actually about a year ago when I was watching Unorthodox. That was the previous show, was the same genre, about a woman running away from the Haredi Hasidic community in Brooklyn and making life for herself in Berlin. So at the time I watched the series, but what really, really caught my attention was not the series itself, but one of those behind the scenes clips called Making Unorthodox. And watching that short clip sharpened the question, but also provided a clue. In that short segment, the team behind the series described the creation process. In painstaking detail, the filmmakers talking about their research trip to Brooklyn, in which they analyzed every bit of Hasidic life. This research informed every element of the show, building exteriors, apartment interiors, costumes, street scenes, wedding rituals, facial expressions, you name it. They researched the show to death. But there was one piece of Hasidic life that was glaringly missing from the description, and that's the interior, the mindset. What in the world goes through the minds of these Hasidim that makes them live this lifestyle? At no point did the creators discuss an attempt to understand or explain what could possibly motivate tens of thousands of individuals to close off in an insular community and reject the trappings of modernity despite easy access. By failing to ask this question and thus project this understanding on the screen, the series creators ended up passing off a lifeless shell for the real thing. The Hasidic community of Unorthodox and My Unorthodox Life and all of the other series in this genre project a community that resembles flesh and blood Hasidim as much as a cadaver resembles a living human being. The outside looks exactly the same, but the life, the inside, is totally missing. While filmmakers toil to create hundreds of fake first trimals, those hats that Hasidim wear for Unorthodox, they didn't take the time to understand the thoughts of the people wearing those hats. They did not delve deep enough to hear about the Hasidic teachings of godliness permeating every single facet and moment of existence. They missed the opportunity to learn about the overarching Hasidic goal, exercising free will to uncover godliness in every interaction in the physical world. So when Julia Hart says on the screen, "They're lost about everything, including which shoe to put on first," yes, there are laws about everything in Judaism, because every single moment of your life and every single interaction with this world is an opportunity to discover godliness. And how are you going to do that? How are you going to create that awareness? How are you going to create that understanding? Only if Torah informs every single experience in this world. So there are two ways to look at it. You can look at it as a conformist sect, and that's one way, and that's unhelpful. But you can also look at it as a way of understanding, what is God telling me through this law? What is God telling me through this halacha? When God wants me to put my right shoe before my left shoe, what's the point? And there is a point, by the way. The point is that right is a side of chesed, it's a side of giving, and the left is a side of gvura, it's the side of constriction, a sign of boundaries. And we always put our right foot first. We always give first before we put our boundaries. So obviously you have to have both, but giving preface to the right side is one reason why we put our left shoe on first. And if you have that awareness, that act of putting on shoes becomes a godly act. That's the whole point of Judaism. But if you don't ask the questions of why do these weird Jews do what they do, you will never get the answers. And the point here in all of these series is that none of the filmmakers ever ask those questions. The not what questions, but the why questions. Why do you do what they do? And if you don't ask the question, you don't get the answer. And nowhere is this more clear than in the treatment of intimacy in Judaism. In every one of these shows, the creators falsifies and fetishize Hasidic sex life as a lifeless affair in the baby-making process. They fail to learn about the deep Jewish perception of vibrant and healthy marital intimacy as the pinnacle of religious holiness. The painfully fake scenes and the farce that you see in the shows and you hear in the shows really leaves you wondering whether the filmmakers truly did not take the time to fact-check the urban myths that are abound, whether their intentions were more sinister. All of the series' creators' painstaking efforts to carefully mirror the external trappings of Hasidic lifestyle juxtaposed against the complete failure to paint the inner world of a Hasid presents a paradox. authors, artists, journalists are some of the most intellectually curious people in the world. Their entire work centers on developing deep understanding and empathy for the people whose stories they're telling. So why is it that the genre of former Orthodox is always failing to delve beyond stereotypes and share the real story? The answer came to me in the opening credits of Unorthodox. The graphic treatment of the title represented accurately everything that that series and the entire genre is really trying to do. The very name Unorthodox, last time, and my Unorthodox life, this time, is an attempt to break the tradition. But the graphics, the line striking through the title, is an attempt to obliterate orthodoxy. The supposedly romantic stories of women running away from the tyranny of Hasidic cults is just a play out of the secular Jewish aspiration to break away with thousands of years of Jewish tradition. In the words of Asti, the protagonist of Unorthodox, God expects too much of me. And so to escape this burden, some Jewish artists and writers stoop to vilifying Orthodox Jews as a whole, the Jews who have the audacity to grapple with God's expectations are written off. To any impartial viewer, it is clear that the protagonists in all of these shows are people with complex histories and problematic family backgrounds. They escape as an attempt to find healing and belonging in their unique personal and family situations, not a negative reflection on hundreds of thousands of Hasidim. Yet filmmakers have chosen to project their own prejudices, insecurities, and aspirations on these women's stories. And the series played out their hidden wishes for Hasidim to quote-unquote see the light and trade the oppressiveness of Williamsburg or Borough Park or Muncie for the freedom of cosmopolitan Berlin and New York. And so while the Hasidic communities are content to live their life and be left alone, so many of their secular brothers and sisters feel triggered by the very existence of the Orthodox. As a result, they produce a litany of creations dragging out and projecting the marginal stories of abuse and dysfunction, which exist in every society, onto the entire Hasidic community. By doing so, they hope to quiet the internal conflict and silence the little voice of the Jewish consciousness within. Such art is both unfair and unconstructive. Perhaps if Jewish artists were to take the time to really understand Hasidim and their mindset, they might have discovered inspiring teachings and traditions that have enriched and empowered our nation for 3,000 years. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa. Each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany is but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Hi, I'm Rabbi David Aaron. The soul basics are the most profound, the most essential, and yet often the most neglected in our education. Join me for Soul Talk on Israel's News Talk Radio and discover the secrets to love, spiritual growth, and personal power.
Welcome back to this third and last segment of today's show. And I'd like to ask you a question, and it might be a strange one, but it's a question that the Degel Machane Ephraim, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, asks at the opening of this week's Torah portion. And the question is, how much faith do you have? Yes, how much faith do you have? Because he says this is the question that really informs everything in your relationship with God, your prayer, your observance of mitzvot, your study of the Torah, and your everyday life, everything you do in this world is really informed by one question. How much faith do you have? And you know when that question really becomes important? It really becomes important when things go wrong. So once again, he asks, how much faith do you have? Do you have the faith that every day is a completely new creation? Like we say in our prayers, that God creates the world anew every single second. But certainly he creates the world anew every single day. Every single day is a new creation, a new time. And when you wake up in the morning, you are a new being. And everybody around you is a new being. Everything that happened until now is really less relevant and can be put aside. When you wake up in the morning, can you look at the world with fresh eyes? Can you look at your experience with fresh eyes? Can you look at yourself with fresh eyes? Can you look at the Torah and at your prayers and at the mitzvot, the commandments you're observing, with fresh eyes? Because if we cannot look at things with fresh eyes, what happens is that everything grows stale. And, you know, just remember the last time you went shopping for your furniture, your living room or your bedroom or your dining room. Pick one piece of furniture in your house that you particularly like and go back and remind yourself of that day when you bought that piece of furniture, let's say that couch, and how excited you were to find that couch in the store, how much you liked it and how much you spent time picking it out. And then you finally found that perfect piece of furniture and you brought it into the house and it looked nice and sparkly and new and beautiful and you were just so excited. And then the next day you were a little bit excited and then the third day you were less excited. And now that old couch that's been around for ages and has to go, it's actually grating on your nerves. And everything in life is like that. We get really, really excited when things are new. And then as things grow older, or as we get more used to them, we sort of get sick of them. And the Degel Mechanei Ephraim says this is exactly what happens with people, right? When people are young, they're fresh and vibrant and have all this energy. When people grow old, they feel less energetic, they feel less vibrant, and very often they have less energy to do things. They're weaker. So this is true about everything. And the question is now, how do we treat ourselves? And how do we treat our relationship with God? Do we wake up every morning and say, hey, it's a new day, and God created a new day for me and gave me this whole new assignment and a whole new mission and a whole new set of opportunities and capabilities and wisdom for this day, and I have an opportunity to have a new relationship with all the people in my life, and I have an opportunity for a new relationship with God? Or do you say, oh, more of the same, same old, same old, and you just feel so drained and tired, and oh God, more of the same thing? So he says, your faith in God really informs how you approach life. And part of the faith is understanding that every minute, but certainly every day, is a new creation, is a new opportunity for life. And now he says, when things go wrong, how do you approach them when they go wrong? Because if you believe that God orchestrates every single experience in our life and every single moment in our life and everything that happens to us, then when things happen, how do you look at them? Do you look at them as a message from God, as something that God sent you to observe, to look at, to learn from, and possibly to elevate? Or do you look at that as an interference? Because if it's an interference, it says what God's making a mistake. So, for example, he gives us a parable. Let's say somebody approaches the king to talk to the king. And obviously, when somebody talks to the king, nobody has the right to interfere in the conversation. So if one of the courtiers butts in and interferes into the conversation, it's because he also has to be part of that conversation and he has an important message that is important for you. It's in your best interest to have that person be part of the conversation. Or maybe he wants to ask you to include his request or something that he wants or she wants in your conversation with the king. So he says the same thing happens to us. Let's say we get up in the morning and we want to go to pray. And as we try to pray, we have all these thoughts interfering. Where did those thoughts come from? They want us to help them elevate. These thoughts are there because they have to be part of our conversation with God. It's not an interference. It's helpful. So if you look at that thought and say, okay, why is this thought coming up for me? What's the message of this thought? And how can I make this thought a part of my conversation with God? Then you will take everything that happens to you in that conversation, in that prayer, and make use of it to become closer to God. And the same thing is in everyday life. We all have so many challenges, and obviously some challenges are very painful and very hard, and I'm not making light of them in any way. But God sends you those challenges for a reason, for a lesson that is in your best benefit. And when I face a challenge, I usually ask myself, what is God helping me learn here? What am I taking away? What do I need to understand that I can only understand through this lesson? And in my experience, very often, even with very difficult challenges, when you look back at them, if you've learned through them, if you've worked through the trauma, if you've worked through the experience, if you've really analyzed and reflected, there's usually something that is very precious that you can take away. It's really like searching for diamonds. Diamonds cannot be found on the surface of the earth. To find diamonds and precious metals, you usually have to go inward. You have to go into the shaft. You have to dig deep, deep down and get all dirty and in places that people don't usually go. It's only there that you can find precious metals and diamonds. And the same is true about our life. Diamonds, understandings, nuggets of insight and wisdom are not strewn on the surface. They're not things you just pick up. They're things you really have to work on. They're things you have to work for. You have to get all soiled and dirty and sometimes skin your knees. But that's the only way to really, really get this big, rich experience, this beautiful understanding, any kind of wisdom that you need for your life. Those things can only be found in the depth of the experience, in the depth of the earth. And if we go back to this word, Ekev, which is the start of our parsha, this weird, strange word that God chose to start this Torah portion with, we have to remember that we're in the 7 weeks of what is called Sheva D'Nechemata, 7 weeks of Haftaras, prophet readings after the Torah portion that are all about comforting the Jewish people. After the 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av, when we read Torah portions of rebuke, after Tisha B'Av and until Rosh Hashanah, we read Haftaras, prophecies that are all about comforting the Jewish people and promises of redemption. So this week, which is the 2nd week, God chose to call this week Ekev, this Torah portion Ekev. It's because we always step on things and we step into things and we step into situations with our feet. And when we step into a situation, very often we can look around and say, why did I step into this? How did I get into this? How did I get into the situation? Why am I surrounded by these circumstances that I don't want to be part of? And God's message is, it's because I love you and this is the best thing for you right now. You need to learn from this. And by the way, this is why this month, although it is a hard month, and is the month that we mark Tisha B'Av, the destruction, it is called Av. Av literally means father. And there's a beautiful parable that the mystics use, and it's about a father carrying a child. And they walk through a forest or the desert, and the child won't stop complaining. I'm so tired. I have to make this long journey. Everything is so bad. I'm so hungry. Things don't smell good. If my father was here, he would have taken good care of me. And the whole time, the child is sitting on top of his father, on his father's shoulders, and the father is carrying him. And the child keeps complaining and complaining and complaining and saying, if only my father was here, if only my father would take good care of me, none of this would have happened. And then finally the father takes the child and he puts him down on the ground. He says, you know what? Try walking on your own. Let's see how you do on your own. Because when you're sitting on my shoulders, you keep complaining and being unhappy. So now let's see how well you manage on your own, because you really need to learn your lesson. But the whole time, the father is right there by the child, holding his hand, making sure nothing happens. And this is the same in our life. Very often in life, we don't notice how good we have it. We don't notice how amazing everything is. We're not grateful for the things that we do have. And so we complain and complain and complain and complain. And sometimes God says, you know what? You have to walk on your own 2 feet for a bit. And you'll have to do this on your own. It's going to be hard. But don't forget, I'm always right here by your side. I'm always here with you. I love you. And I'm only doing this for your ultimate good. I hope you have an amazing week. And I will see you next week here at News from the
Israel
Torah.
News Talk Radio's
bye
chat
bye
room.
Now.
Just click the orange button at the top of the IsraelNewsTalkRadio.home page, log in as yourself or an anonymous guest, and join in on the fun. You'll meet other listeners from all over the world who listen to Israel News Talk Radio, and you can make new friends. Israel News Talk Radio's chat room. It's the closest you can get to being in the studio with us.
We love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candlelighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.